And joining me right now here on the Mark Moses Show to recap the national title game, as UConn is now a back-to-back champ, this guy does a great job covering college basketball and coaching college basketball. He's there at the Final Four. He's my good friend, head basketball coach Billy Mims with Florida Tech. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark. Obviously, it's always fun to get to actually attend the NCAA Division I Championship Final Four. And the games this year were as good as any, and the atmosphere in Phoenix was fantastic.
All right, let's start with this. UConn gets it done. They dominate. They've dominated all tournament, winning double digits every single game. How did they get it done beating Purdue last night?
I think there were two things that went really, actually three. I'm going to say three things that went really, really well for UConn last night. Number one, they took the number two best three-point shooting team in the country. Purdue for the season averaged about 20 attempted three-pointers a game. They made something like seven or eight threes a game. They were percentage-wise the second-best three-point shooting team in the country, I believe. And last night, they took seven threes the entire game. They made one. They shot 14% from three and only made one the entire game. I mean, that's huge in today's game. So that's number one, the three-point shooting difference. On the other hand, look at this. UConn last night took 22 threes. Now, they didn't shoot the lights out. They shot 27% from three, but that's a lot better than 14%. And the six made threes by UConn, that's five more threes, 15 points, and that ended up being the difference in the game. So defending Purdue's three-point firepower and not allowing Purdue to get comfortable, get any rhythm, or even take any shots to amount to anything behind the arc, big key number one. Key number two, I thought, was UConn's transition defense. Purdue did not get a quick score in transition the entire game. Not one. They just did not get the ball out quickly. They didn't get down the floor quickly. They didn't get any easy scores. So everything Purdue attempted last night was 5-on-5, half-court basketball, Mark. And it was difficult against a smothering University of Connecticut defense. And the third and final thing, obviously, was rebounding. And who would have thought that a team like Purdue with a 7'4" dominant inside player with a huge double-double last night, what do you have, I believe 31 points and 10 rebounds, but 7'4", the most dominant big man in college basketball, the two-time Division I Basketball Player of the Year. He had a great night individually himself, but the entire remainder of his team stayed on the bus or slept in the hotel and forgot there was a game. And that the fact that they out-rebounded Purdue, I think the final rebounding totals were 35 to 28 in the end, I believe it was. And, Mark, it wasn't even that close. It was a dominant rebounding performance, especially on the offensive glass. So rebounding by Connecticut, the transition defense of Connecticut, and shutting down Purdue's three-point firepower, to me, were the three biggest keys to UConn becoming back-to-back national champions. And the first time that's happened since Billy Donovan led the Florida Gators to back-to-back national championships way back in 2006-07.
We're here with Billy Mims, head basketball coach at Florida Tech. He's there in Arizona. He was at the game last night there at Glendale, Phoenix. I can never keep up where all these games are. But, yes, you were there at the game. You could see it on TV where UConn was just – they were just more athletic, and it looked like they had more NBA talent-type players on their team. You could just see it on TV. What about there in person, the eye test? How good was UConn?
I'd say, honestly, I mean, their team played really, really well. I mean, they shot 48% from the floor, 82% at the free throw line. When you look at their numbers in the game, their numbers were really good. They had 18 assists last night, Mark. 18 assists. UConn only had 7 turnovers in the ball game. And that's something I thought that was interesting as well, that once Purdue got down double digits, Mark, you felt like the game was over.
Yeah.
Because you just didn't feel like UConn was going to be rushed or turn the ball over. I mean, 18 assists to 7 turnovers in the ball game. That's a pretty perfect game. On the flip side, Purdue had 8 assists, 9 turnovers. That's not such a great performance. You never want to be underwater when it comes assists to turnovers. You always want to have more assists than turnovers. So I thought that Connecticut did a much better job in that area. And believe it or not, even though Zach Edey, you know, the 7'4" man mountain, was in the paint for Purdue, UConn actually had more blocked shots in the game. They had 4 blocks in the game, and Purdue only had 3. So defensively, I thought they were smothering. And then, as we said a moment ago, the offensive rebounding. One thing you got to do to score points in basketball, when you're playing 5-on-5 half-court basketball, you've got to get second shots. There's an old saying, you can't make shots unless you take shots. And very, very rarely, Mark, does the team that takes less shots actually win the game. Last night, total field goal attempts, 54 total field goal attempts for UConn.
Yeah.
And last night, Purdue, let me restate that. 54 total field goal attempts for Purdue last night, 62 field goal attempts for UConn. And there were times in the game, Mark, the offensive rebounding was so strong by UConn that they had attempted 12, 13, 14, 15 more shots at that point in the game than Purdue did. So no wonder Purdue fell behind by 6 at the half. And if you remember, it was an 11-4 run to start the second half for UConn. And so that 6-point deficit, that you go in the locker room and you say, hey, guys, we're okay. It's a 2-possession game. We're only down 6 points. Man, that goes away quickly when the second half start is an 11-4 run. Now you look up, you're calling timeout, you're down 13, and you're not a come-from-behind team.
We're here with Billy Mims, head basketball coach at Florida Tech. He's there at the Final Four, recapping UConn back-to-back titles. I have a statement. I want to get your thoughts. Here's my statement. Dan Hurley is the man now. The man. He is the best coach in college basketball at the D1 level. You're at D2. All right, don't worry. I'll say that. D1, he is the man. Back-to-back titles, I think he can win more. He's 51 years old. I think UConn's the biggest power now in college basketball. After what you saw last night, do you feel that way about Dan Hurley at UConn?
Well, you know what a lot of people out here were saying. And remember, I ride to the basketball, to the games, on a bus full of coaches, you know, at the NABC, the National Association of Basketball Coaches National Convention. So I'm in contact with a lot of coaches out here. And the rumor mill was rampant, you know, obviously, because of the John Calipari Arkansas Razorback situation, and maybe, you know, the farewell at Kentucky. You know, last night there were coaches sitting all around me that while Jay Wright was trying to cut down the net, they were saying, well, the cell phone in his pocket's probably buzzing. It's somebody from Lexington calling to make him the new $100 million man.
What are your thoughts on that job then?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you got to think Danny is happy at Connecticut right now. Remember, he's a New Jersey boy, you know, Jersey City.
Yeah.
Their family is a Northeastern staunch New Jersey family, but Connecticut's not that far away. So he's coaching in an area of the country that he grew up in, that he's always lived in, that he loves, he's familiar with. He's got a lot of family and friends in that part of the country. So, you know, it may be difficult to lure him away, but he's met the challenges there at UConn. Is he going to be another Jim Calhoun and stay at UConn his entire coaching career, you know, to retire at UConn, you know, to live out his life in Connecticut? or is he now enticed by other challenges? And again, he's 51 years old, but so what's he got, 19 years or less maybe, you know, two decades of coaching or less left? So money also speaks volumes. I mean, look at Calipari. For whatever reason that we might not know yet, that he's leaving Kentucky, some Tyson chicken money in Arkansas is certainly a big factor. It is something that is enticing John Calipari to say, you know what, it's a good time to leave Kentucky because I'm going to move to Arkansas. I'm going to be the biggest thing in the state, and I'm going to make a lot of money. So money right now is the real key, and that's going to be an issue going forward because NIL is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So the question I would say is, you know, Kentucky will pay Dan Hurley more than UConn. No doubt about that, right? No ifs, ands, or buts about that. The bucket of money is very deep in horse country. Thoroughbreds and bourbon whiskey. You know, those are the two big things in Kentucky other than basketball. And they have a lot of money there to make sure that they have the best horses, the best whiskey, and the best basketball. So they're going to offer an unlimited amount of money to possibly lure Danny Hurley away from Connecticut. On top of that, so two things. Can Connecticut match Kentucky's coaching offer of money? Two, can Connecticut match Kentucky's potential NIL package of money for the players that you're going to go get? Because money talks. And in this day and age, every great player is looking at the school that can offer him the biggest NIL package. It's no longer, Mark, just about going to get an education or playing basketball because you grew up a fan of that team. It's a business now. How much money can you pay me to put on a jersey for your university and go out there and win you a national championship? It's Blue Chips. You remember the movie Blue Chips with Nick Nolte? The game is now Blue Chips on steroids. Okay? The stuff that Nick Nolte was doing in that game, that back then everybody said, ooh, look at all that cheating, you know? That's what it's come to. The game is the winners cheat, and the great coaches that don't cheat start to lose. They can't win anymore. But you know what? The things that were going on in that movie, heck, giving a player on a farm, his father a tractor, that's peanuts anymore to what some of these guys are getting NIL-wise. So money has changed the game, and the question is, will UConn be able and afford to be able to keep Danny Hurley?
My thought is like, hey, I've just won two championships in a row. We're a blue blood. There's this feeling where UConn's not there. UConn won their sixth title last night. I think that's more than Duke now. I think they're up there. And the go on.
Mark, there are only five teams in college basketball now in that club that's won six or more national championships.
That's wild. Look, and the women's program's the best in the business with UConn, with Geno. Like, I don't think they could pay as much as a Kentucky, but I'd stay there. I think Dan, again, I think he's the best now in college basketball, and I think he can win more championships. And my thing with Calipari is he's in his 70s. Like, and you could tell, I think Kentucky is relieved that he went to Arkansas, because I don't think it was working there anymore at Kentucky with going with the one and dones, and they weren't winning championships. So I think it was a win for Kentucky and Arkansas. What is your thoughts?
I agree with you completely. I mean, I think the one-and-done philosophy has hurt two major coaches. It hurt Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah.
Because Mike Krzyzewski was on top of the basketball world. I mean, he had Duke. You talk about really joining the Blue Bloods. He had Duke where they had never been before. And they were the dominant team in college basketball for at least a decade. And they, whether they won the national championship or not, Duke was a fixture in the Final Four. So as you look at it, all of a sudden, then John Calipari decides to start going one and done. and he starts bringing in guys, training them for 1 year to go to the NBA. You come to Kentucky, you play 1 year, you win a national championship, you go to the NBA. That was their sales pitch, right? And as he started to do that, when it first became popular, it worked because he was getting the best talent in the country. He was getting potential NBA players, excuse me, where other teams like Duke and Mike Krzyzewski at that time were winning traditionally with great college basketball teams, not necessarily a team full of five NBA players. You know, John Calipari sort of all of a sudden was the second coming of Michigan's Fab Five, bringing in five freshmen that you feel like could win a national championship, bringing in five freshmen that are going to leave in a year and go to the NBA. That happened years ago, you know, with Michigan's Fab Five, and really hadn't happened again since then until Calipari started doing it at Kentucky. And sadly, I believe Mike Krzyzewski followed Calipari's path and started saying, to win national championships at Duke, we got to go get some one-and-dones. We got to get the Zion Williamsons of the world, the Paolo Bancheros of the world. We got to go get the guys who are NBA players, NBA bodies, NBA ready, but the rules won't let them go to the NBA yet. So we're going to take them for a year. We're going to train them, develop them, win big with them, and then watch them go off into the NBA sunset. Well, Mike Krzyzewski never won another title when he started going down that road. John Calipari won a couple, and then it started to fail. And if you look back over the last few years, no one has really come into the Final Four and won the collegiate national championship on the backs of two, three, four, maybe one-and-done players, a boatload of freshmen. You're winning now with veterans. And I'll say something else about that, Mark.
Yeah.
You know what I think played a big role in making that happen? The change back to winning with veterans is COVID. Because in college basketball, everybody got an extra year of eligibility because of COVID. Mm. That extra year has given some guys 5 years of college basketball. And all of a sudden, I don't care how good a freshman you are coming in at 18 years old, it's tough to win playing against guys that are sometimes 25 and 26 years old. You get a guy that had a red shirt his freshman year, then got a COVID year, then maybe got hurt 1 year and had a medical red shirt, that guy could be in college for 7 years, right?
It's
and
wild.
He came in at 18, and now he's 25, 26 years old. He is a legitimate man against boys. And so over the last few years, since COVID created that longer college career, we've seen more players playing at 25 and 26 years old. It's hard for 18-year-old kids or 19-year-old kids coming out of high school or prep school to compete with 25 and 26-year-old men.
We're here with Billy Mims. I know you're busy. I got two more questions for you, right? And I appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Zach Edey, great college player. Can he make it in the NBA, though?
Well, I'm glad you asked. And secondly, I'm also, I think I really gave the guy a bad rap a few minutes ago. I said something he had 31 and 10. Hmm. I think he had 37 and 10 or something like that. So I undervalued even his performance last night. Sadly, he scored 37 of Purdue's 60 points last night. I mean, you took the entire rest of their team combined had 23 points last night. He had 37, way more than the entire remainder of his team. His supporting cast did not show up last night. But we did still see something really special. We saw sort of an old-school post player. Zach Edey is a monster, size-wise. He's 7'4". You know, he weighs 300-plus pounds. He has got an unbelievable body, but I think he'll make it in the NBA. How good he'll be, it'll be hard to say, But there are three reasons he'll make it in the NBA. Number one is obviously size. Number two, he's got great hands, Mark. Great touch. Around the basket, he's really good with that nice little soft hook shot around the bucket. And he's got such touch, soft touch, that when he gets a good look from anywhere 10 feet and in around the basket, he stands a good chance to score. He's difficult to defend close to the basket because of size, touch, and the third area, footwork. He's got really good footwork. He's got good hands, good touch, and he's got tremendous size. Those three things are going to make him a valuable NBA player. Does he become an NBA All-Star? Who knows? That's a crapshoot no matter what,
yeah.
Right? But he will be a solid 7'4" NBA post player. And I'll tell you one other thing about him is that in the tournament going into last night's game, right, they said that he had rested a total of, in the last four games, I believe, 33 seconds. This is a 7'4" guy that runs up and down the court. He's got a high basketball IQ. He conserves his energy. He knows when to go, when not to go. He's really, really beyond his years in basketball intelligence, high IQ basketball player. And I think that's going to help him as a pro because people say, God, he's got to be getting tired out there. Remember, the pro game, Mark, is not 40 minutes long. It's 48 minutes long. And in the pro game, you see most guys will play about 40 minutes a game, the best players. If they get 8 minutes rest tonight, that's pretty good. Well, as a collegiate player, Zach Edey has already shown he can play 40 minutes tonight. He's been resting 33 seconds down the stretch. So I think that also is something. And, you know, I told you at breakfast I was talking to a Purdue fan this morning as I was sitting out here having a nice breakfast. He showed me some photos and told me a story about Zach Edey that touched my heart and said, you know, I hope this young man becomes a very successful professional basketball player because he's the kind of guy you'd like to see succeed. He said, Coach, what people don't normally see, he said, I go to every Purdue home game. I took a picture of one of the games a few weeks ago just to show my friends. The place was empty after the game. The stands were empty except for about 50 to 75 people hanging around one of the end zones behind one of the baskets, right? Mm-hmm. And everything else in the arena there at Purdue, empty. Now, you know the team had to go back to the locker room. They had to talk to Matt Painter. They had to get their post-game breakdown. These people hung around and were waiting in that end zone. And there was a picture of this empty arena, like 75 people standing there in the end zone. And Zach Edey had gone up into the crowd. He was signing autographs and taking pictures. And according to the fan that I talked to, he said, I took that picture to show some of my friends that that's who this young man is. And it wasn't a one-night thing like last game of his collegiate career, farewell to Purdue fans. He said he does that every single night, every home game at Purdue. He still has his uniform on. He finishes his commitment to the team and the coaches, and he comes back out in that still same sweaty uniform, goes into the stands, takes pictures, signs autographs. That's the kind of young man that you want to see be successful in the NBA.
That's really cool. And I saw a stat, and I'll let you go, where it's funny, like Gene Caney was there forever, legendary coach at Purdue. He never went to the Final Four, but this team did. It's a pretty crazy stat, and I don't know, just UConn was so good. All right, I know you're going to fly back. How about in a couple days, maybe next week, come in studio and we'll hear all the behind-the-scenes stories. Can we do that, Coach?
Absolutely, Mark. I really appreciate it. I'd love to. And I'll leave you on one thing.
Okay.
The most fun that the fans had last night, because, you know, most of the game, if you weren't a UConn fan, you weren't having a lot of fun, right? UConn kind of took over in the first half, had a nice run going off the court at halftime, came back out, dominated the first couple of minutes, and pretty much dominated the entire second half of play. So for the entire arena. The most fun that was had all night, and I don't know if television showed this, so that's why I had to share it with you and your listeners. They put up on the Jumbotron a split screen for a bit, right? And they had two people on the split screen performing to the crowd, right, to get their fan bases to cheer. One, the legendary Caddyshack star, Bill Murray, who was obviously pulling for UConn because his son is an assistant coach on the UConn staff. And on the other side of the screen was Drew Brees, a obviously NFL Hall of Fame quarterback who was a Purdue Boilermaker. And the back and forth between Bill Murray and Drew Brees, that was something funny, fun, and I love the way the NCAA last night utilized those two guys, their affinity to the two programs, to make everybody, no matter which school you were from, really enjoy a moment late in the second half during one of the timeouts. It was probably one of the most fun things I've seen in the 30 or so Final Fours I've attended.
Hey, basketball coach Billy Mims of Florida Tech, thank you so much for coming on. Have a safe trip back to Melbourne. I'll see you in a couple days, all right?
Always a pleasure, Mark. Thank you.